It's great to be here. I haven't been here for, I was here about, I reckon it must be about 5 years ago. But now I've got the book. I've been in Ireland now for a long, long time. When I first moved here, one of the things that particularly struck me was the way that the Irish used swearing as punctuation. And I mentioned this to an elderly lady that I met, and she explained to me why this was. This is called verbatim. "It's all the fault of the British," she said. "The cursing came in with the troopers, the other ranks and their wives as bad. Before that, we Irish never swore. No curse would pass our tender lips, no drop of whiskey, no casual cruelty. Sure, weren't we a gentle race until the squaddies boated in? We were milk and honey, the soft heads of babes, the pigs at Christmas, root vegetables and stone walls. What did we have to swear about? Until the British came." And then my next poem is, my mother doesn't know whether to love or hate this poem. It's subtly feminist, if you will. It's called While It Lasted. "One day when I was 13, my mother's hands fell off. It rolled under the table, giving the cat a bit of a turn. We looked at them, but they gave no sign. A couple of twitches and that was that. Mum stood at the chopping board, still as a goalpost. Dad made her lie on the chaise and went to put on the potatoes. She lay, holding her bloody stumps high so they wouldn't make a mess of the gold velvet. Dad cooked the dinner and dished up. We gave her a plate too, but how could she eat it? Don't mind me, she said. I gave her a bite of my ham and all of my broccoli. Dad asked if he should call the doctor. I don't want to make a fuss. The cat jumped on her lap, but having no hands, she couldn't stroke her or tip her off. She rubbed her head against my mother's cheek, then left to wind in and out of my legs instead, purring, which she never did before. You go off and enjoy yourself, Mum said. So I went to watch Top of the Pops. With the door shut, tied up my school blouse and danced on the rug like Pan's people and didn't turn down the volume for the loud ones. Dad asked if she wanted to go to the pub. I don't want to be in the way, she said. We read the same page of the paper over and over. The next day I made my own school lunch and had wheat toast for breakfast instead of Weetabix. Dad put Mum's hands neatly in a Tupperware box and stored them next to the lentils. Don't worry about me, said Mum, I'll get by. Weeds grew, dust gathered, the cat shed ginger hair. Dad shopped and washed, I cooked and cleaned. We gave up ironing and cabbage and mowing the lawn. Mum's stumps healed up nicely. On the shelf next to the mouldy lentils, her hands shriveled like marigold seeds. Then the cat caught a blackbird, ate it, sicked it up all over the hall floor. We stared at the lake of vomit and feathers. It was good while it lasted, Mum sighed. She opened the Tupperware with her teeth, screwed both hands back in, and filled the bucket with hot, soapy water." So my collection's called The Space Between, which is, I like to explore quite a lot of different spaces. I like the space between the science and the arts, and I've got some science poems later on. But this, the the phrase comes from this particular poem, and it's about this, it's about listening between words as to what somebody's really saying. It's called Reaching Agreement. I go to quite a lot of poetry readings and fiction readings and prose readings, and I think after you've listened to a few, you kind of drift off. And I drifted off in this one, but partly because the guy who was reading was very beautiful. Actually, somebody else read this poem and didn't know the story behind it, and they assumed it was a really bad date. So, you know, once you put a poem out there, kind of, it's their own interpretation. It's kind of interesting. Reaching agreement. And I realise I'm listening to your voice, not your speech, not any of your points. Though you've considered every one, deliberated for hours, weighed the arguments. But I'm zoned out to the latent rumble that's near the limits of perception, tuned to a harmonic that sets whales singing. The enveloping timbre would sway a jury, would sell a pianola. Your lips move, but I'm hearing the way you taste the space between the words, phrasing so there's something more than silence, an emphasis pregnant with promise. I'm wondering how it would sound if you were murmuring my name, intoning, moaning the buttered safety of it. Your breath is measured. The rhythms soothe me, cajole and warm me to an undeniable, joyous yes to whatever it was you said. I went to school in Scotland before I moved down to England, and they had, when I was still at school, they had corporal punishment in school, and in Scotland they have the belt in primary school, the belt. When the school roof shook with a chatter, or someone laughed when Jimmy did that jerky thing, when Kirstine gave cheek again, or Greg showed his glass eye, when Fiona made orange squash run down her nose, or drew blotted ink on Aileen's good jersey, when someone scratched a bad word on a chair, and no one told, though we all knew it was David. When a corner brawl broke out, or everyone fought over greens versus blues. If you threw snowballs at a teacher's bike, if you wrote on the blackboard at break, if you looked out of the window, if you were late, if you chewed your hair, if you spoiled your jotter, if you forgot your homework, if you mixed up your letters, if you sang out of tune, that's when teacher opened her flip-top desk with a meaningful look, and the sleeping black mamba uncurled and reared up its full length. We, sick and silent, squirmed on our hands, watched its thick body thrush, its buckle eye squint. It was a fistful of wasps on your crossed hands. It was as red as the sunset in 10 million degrees. She would look at your face and her eyes would go narrow. If you didn't cry, she was disappointed. Okay, so science. I have a physics degree, and I love science, and it creeps into my poems, but this one was kind of deliberate. It's about quantum tunneling, where if I touch this microphone with my finger, then some of the particles from my finger are in the microphone, and some of the microphone is in my finger. Mm. And it works with people as well. And so the way I have the poem laid out, this is you, and this is me, and gradually they swap over, and the poem reads down, and it reads across as well. So it's kind of a really interesting jigsaw puzzle to do. Equations on waking. You cling to the brink of sleep. In the thin light, I watch your dream. Your eyelid flickers, mouth twitches. I touch your night rough chin. You move as I kiss your jaw. if it were as dark as a shut down mine, I could still know your scent. Dusky, dizzy, sweet. You breathe out, I breathe. Your pulse beats to my heart. You teeter at the edge. I move slow as dawn. Sunshine spoons around you, closer. My skin to your skin. We share the warmth, but skin's no barrier. I analyze wave functions, find my busy fundamental particles, quantum tunneling through you, and fragments of you in me.
Have you read The Third Policeman?
No, I haven't actually. It's on my list. I should read that, should I?
That's quantum tunneling.
That's it.
Bicycles and horses. Mm-hmm. People swapping molecules.
Oh, right.
Okay. Another science poem. This is about two double stars that are so close together that there's a bridge of energy between them. How to stay married for 52 years. I'm not married for 52 years, I just wanted to know that. This is somebody else. These double stars, VFTS352, near the Tarantula Nebula, stick close like those couples so newly joined they cannot help but touch each other. Their proximity broadcasts coupleness. Fingers brush the backs of hands. Eyes are hungry for the other's face. Every expression, every nuance consumed. These two stars cannot resist the pull. Gravity spins them round each other in orbit so hot, so near, their hearts are bound with a brilliant bridge of energy. Some pairs, most pairs, are unbalanced. The smaller, more loving one lets its light burn only for its partner, which, vampire-like, sucks it dry, eventually subsumes it. But these two have the measure of each other. Rapidly they wheel, mixing elements one to another and back again, their symmetry long in the forming. Like Larry and Nance, married for 52 years, they must be doing something right. Love, humour, mutual support, but doing their own thing, being their own star. Inevitably, like you, like me, their end will come. But unlike us, these two will go together, perhaps in a long duration burst of gamma rays, a love song to the universe, or with a cataclysmic kiss, erupting supernova explosions to champagne, a binary system of black holes, circling forever separate, forever close. Oh yeah, Cork poem. My in-laws are all in West Cork, and these are some. We were driving. I don't know if anyone from West Cork that here. If you go from the road from Roscarbery down to Glendore, there used to be a sign on one of the fields, and this Spark poem is called. It's about some very talented West Cork cows, of course. All. In West Cork are quite talented. These are particularly so. The light fantastic. Beyond the back of beyond, along a high hedge meander, a heavy pause rested, like the silence on an empty beach after a surfer's wave. I sat with my finger on the map as you tried to read between the folds. You pulled over at a sign saying, Dancer Cows Crossing. And we watched the Frisian hoofers pirouette out of the field, conga up the lane, soft shoe shuffle into the yard, the farmer quick stepped the gate shut, and we tripped on. As Ben said in the introduction, I'm originally from Coventry, and this is a Coventry twinned with Cork.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. So this is a Coventry poem. I don't really like Coventry, and perhaps corpses will come out of the harbour. Ruby of the sky. Our comprehensive school was an assembly line of low ambitions. The concrete home economics rooms, high bench labs and drafty classrooms, a means to pass the years until adolescent notions were whittled away. Boys were trained for the car factories, making Minis or Jaguars, it was all the same to them. Mucky workshops, Swarfiga and Union Jews, Saturdays on the terraces, pints with the crew down the Albany Club. Girls were shaped as hairdressers, shop assistants, waitresses. The clever ones took touch typing, shorthand and neat attire to sit prim in typing pools, eye and catch a man with prospects. Ruby didn't want to mark time in an office until she was caught. She dreamed of being a roofer, hammering high above the road, roped to a chimney, eating an apple, a straddle, a shingle ridge. Not for her the whine of the pneumatic lug nut wrench, nor the whir of the hood dryer, the kerchink of the till. The summer hum of lawnmowers or chainsaws did not entice. She escaped to the skyline, scrambled up ladders like piano scales, judged the rake with an experienced eye, mended gables and eaves, replaced tiles, cleared clogged valleys and gutters, fixed flushing. Those factories are demolished now, friends of my youth long laid off. But look up there, there's Ruby. She whistles as she power hammers a fascia board, pauses on the roof hip to listen to the lazy wind, the way the wind blows. I thought I'd actually read a poem. I did some translations of some poems by a Dutch poet called Fraukje Taunman, and she's a good one here that's called Weegschaal. I don't know if there's anybody speaks Dutch here. I won't bother reading it then. It's so translated, a Weegschaal is a balance. You speak Dutch?
Ignore
you me. Do?
Oh, you were asleep, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say. Anyway, balance. So this is for Fraukje Taunman, okay? What if I paint my nails red and pare a pencil? Draw a line down the middle of the page, put the cons on the left and the pros on the right. On the one side of the line is IKEA. I wouldn't go there anymore because I only go there with you. Underneath is you calling from work, calling about work, me calling you at work. I don't need that. On the other side is that I gain a family. They said it themselves. Last Friday I was at your brother's party and Sunday at your sister's. Also, there are the new friends who all have a left side for things they've lost, you, and a right side where sometimes they've put me. On the left, I've no one to mind my house or my cat or go with me to the vets. But I've seen how happy you are, I've put on the left side. On the right side as well. The pencil breaks. I palm my nails red. There are some topics that are quite that seem to be almost taboo still to write about in poetry. This one's called Popcorn Menopause. Once mine was pebble hard like yours, encased impervious in my old shell, static in my contours, but I've come in from the cold to a lowering heat. I never knew such passion, my skin flushed gold. That rising warmth, I can do nothing. It's formidable, inevitable, and I who had thought myself unbiddable, as dry as Arizona found, but deep inside my inhospitable husk, my kernel still pounds, hot-blooded. It starts to swell, a tiny hiss grows to the sound of choirs singing a cappella. Now I can no longer stop myself, itch to change forever, and I pop.
Uh,
you had some very hefty floods down here, and then there's some really big ones in Paris there last week while we were having beautiful sunshine here. And this is kind of about floods and rivers as outside the river. I'm hauling bottled water when it starts. The roof rattles as the first innocent drips drop. Corrugated iron clangs louder than reality, but reality is now dribbling, Ronald's rivulet dinkle, prinkle down windows. Skies grey as an economist's suit hurl, joyful drops big as marbles, and just for a moment, everyone inside pushing a trolley or lugging a basket stops in the drain-lit, fluorescent, sterile aisles of the mega super duper humongous market. We all look up as the din drums and rumbles like gunfire, incessant water bullets, an approaching rabble of ne'er-do-wells or hairy revolutionaries, stomping protesters or happy-clappy pilgrims, assorted creeds and greeds. And my clear spring water in neat bottled litres, unreasonably priced, no longer seems reasonable, as outside the river thunders and fills, floods and breaks the banks which were already ripe, overripe for the breaking. The dribble, drabble, gabble, gushes, flushes, washes all before, flashes the streets, bashes doors and shop fronts, seeps through shutters and letter flaps. It finds every weakness, rushes in where it wants to, until boards are breached, floors are streams, debris, flotsam, floating boats of apples and rice cakes. Bottles bubble on soapy, honey-sunk, scented waves. We abandon our bags, scramble upwards on teetering shelves of Weetabix and muesli, passing the children one to the other like bags of flour, haul ourselves up to the ceiling tiles as the lights, the harsh tubes flicker, buzz and crack out. Right, we're coming up to the Euros, and I have no interest whatsoever in sport, but I picked up a few phrases. I came down to watch something on the telly, and there was some football match still going on the telly, and the commentator said, only 6 minutes of normal time remain, and I thought, what happens then? Yeah. Only 6 minutes of normal time remain, then it gets weird. The fouled forward dives into the grass with a splash and is never seen again. The backs run the centre half into forfeits forward and off bottom, off top, off the other side and underneath, outside, through side and far side. The keeper calls handball and eyeball, crystal ball, hairball, basketball and basket case. There's a free kick, paid kick, a cheap kick, cheap trick, cheap skate, but he makes a save, save face, save as you earn, save my soul to the corner. It hits a goalpost, moves a goalpost, post the move goalpost, the red card, the purple card, the green card to America, and he's sent off, sent away, off the scent and on the bench, on the rocker and off his rocker, watching the lines man, the circles man, the small parallelogram, till the whistle blows, wet. I like a glass of wine. This is a poem about the seduction of wine. I went to buy an expensive bottle of wine for a present, and the guy in the off-license, who was a real wine buff, he knew his stuff, he was brilliant actually, but I said, how about this wine? He said, oh yes, that wine is Drinking Now. So that's the title, Drinking Now. This wine wants to have its way with you. It wants to seduce you with spicy notes, dreams of long, lazy dinners and long-lost loves, warm you, make you smile, lower your defences. This wine wants to come at you from a different angle, touch you in unfamiliar places, your tongue, your mouth, yes, your lips. See, swirling within the silky undercurrents, they have something to say. This wine wants to uncork you, tickle your taste buds, your fancy, your fantasy. Sniff it, sip it, gulp and pour it, there purely for the revel, the reveal of imaginative insinuations, crickets on a summer night, the empty beach at dark fall, salty waves and salty wives, the extravagant promises of emotional men. Now, sliding down behind your breastbone, this wine brings a tingle to your fingers, a softness to your gaze, cherry tinges to your cheeks. This wine wants to get fresh, to question your reserve, blurs the boundaries, loosens the larynx. Maybe later you'll sing again, dance to praise the winemakers, all pale. The oenologists honour the care taken in the making. Sun-warmed, barrel-aged, the long finish lingers like a memory, like a kiss. So we're getting our first up here. This is more about seduction, and it's actually inspired by Vincent van Gogh, but it kind of went away from that. So is there anybody here who is a redhead or used to be a redhead? Oh, then we have a redheaded man. Excellent. Flaming for Vincent. What's your name?
Not Vincent, no.
Okay. Well, give me a redheaded man with fisherman hands that can gut a salmon. I'll mend a dry stone wall, and in the next moment take an eyelash from my cheek to paint the suggestion of cracks on canvas. Or give me a red-headed man with a thick matching beard to roughen my skin with kisses. I'll wallow in the man scent of his collar, probe the hollow at his throat with my tongue tip. Or give me a red-headed man with flecked forget-me-not eyes. I'll smother his freckled back in factor 50. Love him, something rotten, on the green tartan blanket. Or give me a red-headed man with lumberjack thighs. He'll show me off to his soot-headed buddies, cycle home before closing and take his time with me. Oh, give me a red-headed man with fire in his heart. I'll fill his belly with porter cake, make jam from the hedgerows, honey roast the parsnips he digs from the garden. Oh, give me a red-headed man and I'll give him a barrowload of red-headed bearings with candy frost cheeks and milkshake smiles. We'll picnic on the green tartan blanket. I'll mother their tender freckled skin in factor 50. Oh, Lord, please, I'm burning up for a red-headed man. Okay, last poem coming up now. Just thanks very much to Ovil and Paul and Ben for asking me down here. And it's really nice to be in Cork. This is a happy poem about death. Because there aren't enough of those. What to do with my ashes? When I die, cremate me. Drop me in a bucket of soapy water and mix well with a wooden spoon. Incant if you feel the urge. Sing songs, read poems, tell stories, don't cry. Then take some metal coat hangers and twist a circle, one each. Go to a wide open space. You choose. Somewhere nice you can revisit. Dunk your loops into the suds and take turns to blow big, beautiful bubbles. Release me over the river, into the trees, and up into the wide blue sky. As with each glistening glow, I float away. Thank you very much.